In the next episode of the Black Film Space podcast, we interview Rashad Richardson, a music licensing executive. Rashad is the founder of Madden Flow Entertainment and has made song placements in the TV shows For Life, Magnum P.I., and Charmed. We talk with Rashad about the role of a music supervisor, tips for licensing music for independent projects, the process of licensing music on TV shows and film, and much more. And now, on to our interview. All right, Rashad, welcome to the Black Film Space podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and I feel very welcome. Thank y'all for having me.
Of course, of course. So can you explain to us what Madden Flow Entertainment is and why you started this company?
Yes. So Madden Flow Entertainment, aka Madden Flow Sync Agency, it is a music licensing company. And essentially, I should probably go into what a music licensing company is, and then I can explain why I decided to create my own. Does that sound good?
Of course. Good. Go for it.
All right. So a music licensing company, or a sync agency, is essentially a company that works on behalf of mostly independent artists. There are some special cases where we work with, you know, renowned artists or renowned producers. But essentially what we do as a sync agency is we pitch music for the different opportunities that are out there, whether that be indie films, commercials, podcasts, trailers, just anything where you are visually watching it and you hear music accompanying it. That's essentially what a licensing company and a sync agency does, is they're often, you know, vying to get the artists that are signed to them placed in these different coveted spots. And just to give you a scope of the field, you know, there's like the Universals, there's the Warners, there's the Sony ATVs, essentially just any record label or music publishing company is a competitor of a company like my company that's a licensing company. Mm. When we know about different opportunities, usually Sony or Warner or Universal knows about them too. And now I can go into why I decided to create my own instead of working for Sony, Universal, Warner Chappell. So essentially, I did work for Universal. And for me, it was a situation of when I finally got into a situation where I could actually pitch music, I noticed that when you work for a big machine like a Universal Music Group, it's only so much mobility and flexibility there. And a perfect example of this is just a moment where, you know, I would get different music briefs of like, hey, we're working on Empire and we want a bombastic hip hop song. And I wouldn't say that, but that's the kind of words you get in the brief.
Right.
I was like, what?
Nah, that's hilarious. But so they just use descriptive words. But what it all comes down to is they usually send us references of like, we want something that sounds like a Ludacris track, but in 2020. And it was moments like that where I went to a school full of talented people, shout out to Berklee College of Music, that essentially they had that skill set and ability to create 90% of the tracks, of the briefs that we would get that would request different types of music. So you know, when I'm at like a big company like Universal and I see these briefs, when you're at a company like that, you can only pitch the catalog that exists with that company. So to just give you even an analogy here, when you work for Universal or Warner, what you're pitching from is like ice. It's like a literal solid block. You can only take from that block, and that block is what it is. at a music licensing or sync agency, especially one that we've built our model on, we're more like water. We're on our Bruce Lee, where where we flow, and it's a situation of, okay, we just got this brief. This brief is for, you know, maybe the music supervisor or the producer, the executive producer. They have like 20K in their budget to get that perfect song. So we go through our catalog of what we have because we want to look out for our artists that are signed to us. So we look through that and try to find the best option. But there are times where it just ain't there, the same way it's not going to be there at a Universal or a Warner. And the difference there is Universal or Warner, they don't communicate with their artists. Like, there is just like, hey, we don't have it, on to the next. And not only that, they have so many briefs coming through, they can afford to just say on to the next. The difference with the music licensing company, and the reason, to get back to your question, the reason why I started the music licensing company, is just because it's almost like breaking the third wall or fourth wall, whatever you call it, where instead of us, you know, coming to our artists after the fact of like, hey, we got you a placement, here's your check, it's more so like, hey, we're working on this placement, we don't have this track, there's 20K on the line, what's good? Do you have something that you didn't send us? Or better yet, the deadline is a week away. Can we cook up something? And that's the main rush and thrill I get out of running my own company, where, yeah, we, part of our business model is modeled after the major publishing company, since that's where I got the majority of my experience. But then there's the other part injected in there of just logistics and common sense that, and just flexibility. So yeah, that's essentially, I know that's a long-winded way to answer it, but no, hopefully I hit it.
You hit it right in the head. So what is like your vision for the company, like 5-10 years? Are you looking to compete with the bigger companies, like toe to toe?
Well, I'd say right now, yes, on a bigger scale, yes. But even right now in real time, we're competing every single day with these bigger companies. Like the fact that I worked there meant that I was able to bring relationships. So, you know, the people at Amazon Prime right now, the people at Netflix right now, the ones that would send briefs to me as an employee, I was able to pull those relationships over to now they send my company briefs for the exact same thing that they're sending a Universal or Netflix. I guess to just think about this question a bit more, let's see. So do you mean in the sense of at some point, my company is not only repping the up-and-coming artists, but we're more so repping the Bruno Marses and the Chris Browns. Is that what you mean?
Not necessarily. Just, I guess, where do you want your company to be in like 5-10 years?
Oh, totally got you. The number one priority is we want to be weaved within the urban culture. We want to be weaved within Black culture. I should say Black culture, not even urban culture. I want it to be a thing where right now I feel like a majority of people in the music industry, especially people of color, they are often chasing placements for albums right now. Like whether it be their publisher or their connections, is usually like, hey, Beyonce's working on an album right now. Let's do a songwriter session. Let's try to get a placement on her album. And for, I would say at least 7 out of 10 of those types of producers, who, mind you, these are like high-level producers who've gotten that one Brent Fires placement, they've gotten that one St. John placement, like they're doing work, but it's like they have no clue that the same way you can get placements on albums, you can get placements in TV shows, in films, podcasts, like just all over media, you can hustle that way. And I want to position a company to where we're that introductory to all of these amazingly talented creators who need an introduction to the sync world, who they got things going on their like writers in, they've got their album placements, but now it's like, okay, I want some Netflix bags. I want some, you know, Apple TV bags. Like we want to be that go-to company for that on the creator end. And also on the producer end, I mean, on the TV producer end, we want to be Issa Rae's first thought when she's like, we need a music option. We want to be Lena Waithe's first thought when she needs a music option. Like, we really mm-hmm. want to be culturally relevant to where whoever's producing a show and whatever screenwriters are writing up their next show, they already know, have in mind, like, as they're writing their script, all right, we about to tap in with the Matt and Flo team because they got the fire that's going to complement what my script is saying. Like, it's going to be seamless, like peanut butter jelly.
Got you. Yeah. Got you. Got you. Y'all going to get there.
I appreciate that, my brother.
What do you look for artists that, you know, you want to include on your roster?
I look for substance. Like, I love it when an artist can reflect the times that we live in. I really love that. I love presentation, whether it be, you know, your overall package. What does your social media look like? Like, do you have a lifestyle, a brand? Do you have a movement, a following? I like that. And also with presentation, let's talk sonically in music. I really appreciate the artists who are willing to work on a track an extra 2 weeks just so it can be timeless, as opposed to sending something that sounds good for now. It sounds decent, but it's not mixed properly. The lyrics could have been more clever. You could have took the lyrics an extra step. I love artists that play chess with their music as opposed to checkers. Shout out Queen Gambit right quick. So I would say that mostly. And then honestly, being able to understand creative direction. Well, I guess I wouldn't know if the artist is able to follow instructions if I haven't signed them yet. Like, I need artists that can follow that. Otherwise, you know, like, say a screenwriter like one of you sends me something and, you know, I repackage that to relay to our artists, and they send something completely left when you're asking for center or you're asking for right, then it doesn't matter how dope your music is, it's not going to go in that project.
Gotcha.
Can you also talk about being a music supervisor and how that might correspond with someone who's staffed to do that on a television show or a film?
A music supervisor on a television, TV series or film, they work hand in hand with the showrunner. They work hand in hand with the executive producer. That's who they answer to. And essentially, they are given a budget as they're reading over the script. Like, they go to the spotting sessions, they read the script, and then ultimately, when it's time to start putting music to the production, the film that's been captured, that's when they reach out to an agency like mine. So I told you who the music supervisor answers to. They answer to the showrunner, the executive producer. I answer to the music supervisor in the sense of, you know, music supervisor's getting ready for their next spotting session. Someone's dying in an episode, so they know they need some sad indie folk music, female vocals that is, the lyrical theme says, I gotta say goodbye. Like, it has to have some kind of lyrical theme of see you soon, hopefully I'll see you again. So that's when the music supervisor communicates to me. The music supervisor is like, hey, I need X, Y, and Z. And then this is also where, you know, the following directions comes into place. Because at that point, that's when I, you know, gather up my team that signed to Matt and Flo Sync Agency. And from there, we gather up, we get the dopest options we can get. And this is also where I'll remind you that music supervisor, depending on the scale of this project, has already or is at the same time reaching out to Universal Music Publishing. They're reaching out to Interscope Records. They're hitting the big hitters as well, if their budget is conducive for it. But yeah, essentially, you know, we as a camp, we get the dopest options we can pull. And I put together a master pitch based on the best of the best, cream of the crop out of our camp. We shoot that over to the music supervisor. And then the music supervisor has the second to last say so. The music supervisor then, you know, they like one song from Universal. They like two songs from Matt and Flo. They like another song from Cobalt or Sony ATV. So they bring those options to either the showrunner or the executive producer and say, here's what we're working with. I personally like this, but these are the options. So that's called getting shortlisted once you make it to that step. from there, it's, you know, a few other people, few other shot callers that decide on that final song. And when that happens, then voila, you've got your sync placement.
Nice, nice. What kind of artists do you sign?
Oh, man. So I'm the type of person that likes everything in my arsenal. Like, I need a knife if we doing close combat. I need a sniper if you know, we far away doing long range. I need a shotgun if you trying to just bust my door down. And it's, I know this is a violent analogy, but but for real, it's like, I really need every tool in the bag, which means I'm getting that random weird guy in Norway who emailed our company and said, hey, you know, I want to sing. Yes. Come join the squad. It's, you're mixing your stuff down. It's quality. All right, it's weird, but I'm sure we'll need it one day. Welcome. Mm-hmm. The random girl from Idaho who does folk, like, yes, welcome to the squad. Your voice is beautiful. Okay, cool. We rocking. And then obviously, when it comes to anything that's like R&B, soulful, retro vibes, like anything like that, I'm just already naturally a fan of. So you might not even have to hit us up. We might find you first. Mm. Yeah, but to answer your question, I wanted to give you more of a detail instead of just responding to everything, because it really is everything. Like, we will take a genre that we don't even know about, but we just found out about it yesterday. Okay, let's lock in.
Got you.
Where do you find people most of the time?
It's a mixture. You know what? I would say over 50% of the artists find us. But when, for me, it's a situation of when I'm on Spotify, like, or any DSP, it's usually a related artist on the side. So, you know, there's that situation where you just go down a rabbit hole of, okay, you're dope and you're off of that branch or in the world of my other favorite artists. So let's see what you got. So that's DSPs. What is the other one? Oh my goodness, Instagram is crazy, just because I don't know what they did to their algorithms, but all I know is when I log in on my Madden Flow Sync Instagram, I think some kind of algorithm has picked up the fact that I visit different like up and coming artists, because it just keeps like suggesting that I follow this person and that person and this person.
Yeah.
And when I click on these people, because I will make time to listen to music that I'm not familiar with, like, it's usually like 9 out of 10 times they're producing at the quality that I want, they have a unique voice, or there's just something different about them. And oh, and I should also add to Lande, I should add to one of your earlier questions, what I look for. There has to be something different about you. Like, I just can't do my current roster a disservice of, say you're that one slick dude that does R&B and you got that raspy voice. I can't do you that disservice of getting 5 more people who do exactly what you do, mm-hmm. have your same raspy voice. So that's the one thing I look for too, is what do you have different that's not in my current tool set, my current roster? What's that thing that I'll be adding?
Right, got it. What do you think about this whole like phenomenon of soundtracks being integrated into television shows? Because it generally used to be film. I mean, obviously it helps the artists, but like, do they see a huge impact, or are most of these artists generally known? Because I know someone that manages an artist and she was like, you know, most of the people that you hear on like Insecure already have a platform. And I'm like, oh, I thought she was like discovering people. So yeah, I just was curious to see like,
right,
what do you think the rewards are for having that kind of platform? Because in the 90s, you know, you could just buy the CD, right, and that directly impacted the artist.
Right. So first off, Insecure is an interesting situation because Issa Rae, she's dope. She's dope, and she pretty much has a monopoly on that situation in the sense of, most people write a show, then it gets handed to someone else to music supervise it, then it gets handed to someone else to kind of curate. But she literally has a show that's in Black culture and has a record label with dope artists that cover the Black culture. So she has a monopoly on that, and that's just a, maybe that's a whole nother conversation. I'll get back to your original question, which is, it's definitely beneficial. Well, the first thing I'll say is it kind of says how important sync has become. Like, yeah, back in the day, it was only a soundtrack. It was only occasion if it was in a movie. Now you have artists that want to be in some TV shows even better than they want to be in a movie. And I'll take it even a step further. Some artists would rather be in a TV show even more bad than they would rather be in a trailer for a movie. And just to give you some context here, most trailers usually pay between the high five figures to the six figures for a placement. And there are some artists that I can say personally on my roster that they would be great to submit for some of the trailers that we work on, but they're just not interested. They'd rather get pitched for that TV show that's popular, but guess how much they're paying? About $7,000 to $10,000 tops. And it just goes to show how, you know, TV series have really clawed their way up to a stature of being just as relevant, just as culturally important as the biggest movies.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's only fitting that, you know, TV shows have their corresponding soundtracks the same way a blockbuster movie in the 90s has their soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That, like, that's the new wave. It's insane.
It's wild. And especially with the bag being so much smaller, artists don't care. They got to be in Insecure. They got to be when Atlanta was happening. You got to be in Atlanta. And now you got to be in Euphoria. Shout out Jim Malone. She's the music supervisor over both. It was over Atlanta and does Euphoria. She's killing it. But yeah, so that's kind of where it is. And I would say, yeah, you definitely get cultural points. If you're placed on that, you get a lot of casual fans who you know, they love to check out the hottest playlist. And that's the interesting thing too, is most soundtracks are technically just a playlist on Spotify. So it's like, really, we could all just make a soundtrack on our Spotify based off of our favorite TV show. We just got to listen to each of the tracks, put it in a playlist, and boom, now everybody can come listen to the quote-unquote soundtrack of season 3 of your favorite show.
What are some mistakes that you see beginner filmmakers making when, you know, putting together music for their projects?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I would say definitely miscalculating what their budget might be. You know, in the case of having big budget ideas, like, yo, I gotta have Lucky Day. I gotta have, who's another one who you think you might be able to afford, but not?
Sir.
Yeah, I gotta have Sir on this. And it's just a situation where you gotta remember, oh, and especially Sir, because Sir, not only is he signed to a record label, but he uses really dope samples in some of his tracks. So it's just, by the time you go through Interscope, by the time you go through Sir's publisher, maybe there's a feature, maybe there's a Masego feature on it too. You got to go there. You got to go to his publisher. You got to go to the label. Then, you know, if there's a sample, you got to go to those writers and those publishers in the label of that original track. Like, it's just a situation where there goes your whole budget. So that's, I would say that's the biggest misstep of, you know, just managing expectations of like, okay, I have to be okay with, if my music supervisor can't flex this situation and get me a steal, I really have to be okay with introducing a new artist through my art, instead of trying to catch that wave of the hype up-and-coming artists or established artists.
Can you give us some sort of something tangible for newer filmmakers, like in regards to how much money they should expect to spend for some of the bigger artists?
For some of the bigger artists, it's different terms of agreement per license. So I guess if you could be more specific, like, is this just like a 30-second are they using like 30 seconds of it in the background of a club scene, or like what's the...
Yeah, let's say it's a first-time feature filmmaker. It's independent film. They're not doing it through the studio, and they're like, okay, I got, you know, $20,000 for music. I want to land one of these artists that are popping. You know, maybe not the A-list Chris Brown or Beyonce, but I want to land a Sir. I want to land a Lucky Day for 1 minute in this really dope montage. Okay. You know, how much money are they looking at? You know, is 20,000 realistic? Is that more than enough?
Yeah, I if you have 20,000 for like 1 minute montage, and you're just shooting for that like Tone Stiff, Lucky Day, Sir caliber, I would say ultimately you can pull it off, but you are going to probably need a sync agent or music supervisor who's been doing this, who works often with the teams that who licenses often, just because they would have that relationship to be able to roll up and say, hey, it's like they're not coming out of the blue saying, hey, can we get a still? But it's more so like, hey, we've already been working together. You know, we usually pay you well, but we got a case where it's a young, hungry filmmaker who is really dope. I've seen the cuts. They really want to license this song. Is there any, you know, can you bend a little bit? And yeah, you could definitely get an artist in that range within 20K. And sometimes it might not even be a case where you have to convince. Some of them might just be like, okay, cool. Yeah. But that's definitely a respectable amount where you can knock on a door and mostly get that.
How do you feel about content creators using songs on YouTube
for their projects? I would say, for me, instantly, that's a little bit cringeworthy. But let me get the full context. Do you mean like they're actually going to these YouTube artists and communicating with them? Like, hey, I'm using your track for this. Do you own this track?
They're meant for public use.
In that case, I would say it just comes down to art. Like, if you're picking dope tracks, the tracks are dope in their own right, then I will never turn my head down just because, you know, like, I pitch music. Like, I'm the type of person where, hey, if I don't land it, but it's dope, I'm rocking with it. So if you get a YouTube beat, or you get a YouTube artist that's properly, the main key is that it's properly licensed, you have permission to use it, then I'm happy for you and I'm rocking with it.
Got you.
And I actually had a question for y'all.
Okay.
Have y'all had, what have been y'all experiences thus far with incorporating music in your projects? And what kind of challenges have y'all faced?
Well, I've just used those websites where you license for like $30.
Gotcha.
Like Audio Micro or
the
whatever.
Needle Drop type of situations.
Yeah, but then like when it was licensed on TV, it became kind of complicated. I had to pay extra money. Yep. You know, so it's kind of like, this isn't really as much of a deal as I thought. I should have just got like an indie artist to do this. And then for my second project, I work with independent artists.
Nice.
And, you know, my pool of people was pretty limited. And I really liked the music, but it, you know, I was like torn because I was like, you know, one song in particular, I was like, I don't know if I should just move on and just put this in my film or find something else that is like better suited for this part of the movie. But I just ran out of money. I ran out of time. So I just was like, screw it.
That actually breaks my heart.
And I actually regret that decision, but yeah.
I hear that. Cause you know, as art, it lives forever. So, you know, to have to sacrifice on that end, I just feel for you.
Yeah, because I think it really does affect how people respond to your project. All aspects of the film have to really be cohesive. But yeah, I was like, lesson learned. Like, I'm never going to use those websites again. I'm always going to work with indie artists, and I'll work out my own agreement with them.
Hey, that is dope. And as a representative of a whole gang of indie artists, I appreciate that. And yeah, that's dope. But because essentially you're also transferring like what would be your budget, but that's essentially equivalent to wealth. You're transferring that to a community of indie artists who are doing what you admire anyway. So that's dope. Mm-hmm. And also, I just wanted to touch on the whole production library thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to throw too much shade at the production library industry, but I will just say, I guess I should really say, don't construe it as shade, but really, the way their business structure is set up, the creators are not really getting much of the back end. The way production libraries work is, you know, they'll give you 500 or they give you a G to record 10 songs. And then they own that, though the production library owns that those 10 songs. They admin those 10 songs. And when they get sales later on, like when they sell to that screenwriter, when they sell to that filmmaker, like it's a really small fraction that the actual creator and artist is getting on that back end. So So the way you're doing it is definitely more favorable to the actual creator as opposed to the machine.
Yeah,
I agree, because there's all these hidden fees anyway. So even though if you're paying like $25, $30 up front, if you get your film licensed, you're gonna have to pay a ton of money.
Right. Which the creator is still not eating off, even though that production company is even getting additional fees tacked on. Exactly. The creator isn't even seeing that.
Yeah.
As far as music supervisors go, how can filmmakers find a good music supervisor? How do they know that they're a good music supervisor? How do they know that they're a good fit? Can you just talk more about that aspect?
For sure. I would say the main thing is just IMDb, really. You all as a creator, the same way us as musicians, we have our favorite artists that we draw influences from. You all as creators of films and visual works, like you draw influences from your favorites. All you have to do is look up your favorites on imdb.com, and within the cast and crew section, it is always going to have a music department, and it is always going to list the music supervisor who was responsible. So from that point on, it's just a matter of doing your due diligence, maybe trying to track that music soup down by their IG, maybe LinkedIn, or maybe just within your network. Hopefully you have like a big bro or big sis who's also doing what you do and has walked the walk and maybe just can connect you, or 2 degrees of separation can somehow connect you so that you can actually reach out to see, you know, what that music supervisor is going to charge for that project, or, you know, just how that'll work.
Got you. And how do you know that? How can someone gauge whether or not they would work well together, or that they'd be good for that project?
I mean, that's a great question. I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, when you do get a music supervisor, I guess it's like being in like a short-term relationship, because they're taking care of your baby and everything. But that being said, it's no real way to, you just have to organically figure that out. We're in a pandemic now, but I would say pre-pandemic, or hopefully post-pandemic, it'll be situations where, hey, let's go grab some coffee, let's go do this. And maybe you could just kind of kick it and vibe and make sure that the actual chemistry is there between personalities. But I would say, you know, hopefully you can ask around to see what other filmmakers' experiences were like working with that music supervisor. And then, as I touched on with the IMDb thing, it's kind of like work speaks the work itself speaks for itself. So you know, if you're already a fan of this show, you're a fan of five shows that the same music supervisor has worked on, then, you know, 9 times out of 10, even if the personality clashes or whatever, like, you know, they're still gonna see your project through and properly license it and get you some dope music to complement your script and visuals.
Yeah. At what point should filmmakers be seeking music for their projects?
I would say as soon as they have a budget in mind, that's when they should start outlining and carving out what music should go where. Just because, you know, you don't want to go to Rodeo Drive and do, you know, shout out 50 Cent. You don't want to do a bunch of window shopping and fall in love, and then you find out your pockets ain't gonna cover the stuff you done fell in love with. Yeah, you just want to make sure you know what your budget is. And then before really doing any creative, and this is just my suggestion, you can't go off this as written in stone, but I would say, like, okay, you highlight certain parts in your scripts where you know you want music to be. And really, a music supervisor's job is to do that. But, you know, if you're starting off and you don't have that budget to get a music supervisor, then that's something you can do yourself. Like, you can go highlighting your script, like, okay, this is a scene where the character is in a car, so obviously we want something in the radio playing. Okay, this is a scene where they're walking in Starbucks, so obviously we want something plugged in here for, you know, like Starbucks background music, like what would be playing here. And it's situations like that where hopefully you know what your budget is, and then you can more so start doing division. Like, okay, my budget is, maybe it's a small budget, I only have $10,000 to license music for this film, but I know it's a spot here. Okay, 10 spots total, do the division. Okay, 5 of these spots, I'm willing to pay $500 to get tracks licensed. You know, for this one big spot, maybe it's a high school prom scene, it has to be a dope, recognizable song. So, okay, I'll try to use $7,500 out of my $10,000 budget there, and then just spread out the rest among the smaller music uses. And once you have that sorted, then it's a matter of, like, starting the creative. Like, okay, what do I really want here? And maybe you could even set up a wish list of, like, okay, these are all the tracks that I really, really want in these spots. And then you can take that to a music supervisor, you can take that to a licensing agent like myself, and we can check off what we think we can cash out with your wish list, and we can give you options for what we know you won't be able to cash out for your budget.
Gotcha.
Was there a certain level of, like, music, I don't want to say training, but I guess, you know, that you needed to get in order to do your job? Because, I mean, you're listening to the music on a deeper level than, like, the average person, for obvious reasons. Thanks. So what gave you, like, a good ear? You know, was it any sort of technical training, or was it just something that you intuitively picked up on?
That's a great question. And to answer your question, yes or no, I would say yes. It's really important to, it's just so many things you have to listen for. You have to listen for tonality, instrumentation, lyrical themes, the dynamics. Like, it's, you know, is it starting small and then getting big? Is it starting big, then getting small? It's almost like the way a quarterback has to process a bunch of stuff at once during a play. Like, us as music licensing agents and music supervisors, we have to process everything going on at that song at once and compare that against whatever the dreams and wishes are of the executive producer. And y'all probably already know, because y'all have been in creative, executive producers and showrunners have some wild requests sometimes that sometimes contradict the request itself with something else in the next sentence. So it's just a situation where, yeah, you have to be equipped with certain skill sets. And I'll go into that. At least I'll say what has helped me, at least. The number one thing, I was raised in church and became a church musician. As you know, there ain't no sheet music in church, or at least not Right. At least not a Pentecostal Baptist church or, you know, Kojic church. You ain't gonna see no sheet music there, which means, guess what? You straining your ear because you're trying to learn how chords work. You're trying to learn similarities between, okay, we played that song two songs ago. The chords of that are similar to this track right here, which means I just now got a cheat sheet of, like, I can, you know, kind of carve out what I was playing on that song with this one, and I kind of know what chords are about to come next because it's familiar now. And essentially what that's really called is ear training. And, you know, being able to hear chords and know, okay, that's major, that's minor, that's a dominant chord. And so that essentially helped. But what was the icing on the cake for me and what gives me a leg up against a lot of our competitors, including some of the people pitching music at labels, is that I went to Berklee College of Music. Shout out Berklee. Shout out also the Black Berklee Network, who they're dope. But they put us through the ringer with what's called solfege classes and what's called ear training classes and harmony classes. All three really helped me a lot. But I would say the one that helped most is just music theory and ear training, just because that's what essentially tells you, you know, like when someone says, I want a sad song, it needs to say goodbye, someone died. That's the class that lets you know, like, hey, they want a sad song, you got to go with minor chords. You cannot, like, it's not even relevant to send any songs with a bunch of major chords, because major chords equals sunshine. Like, that equals walking out on a beach. So to really just answer that question, music theory, ear training, that's the formal kind of classes that I took that helped give me a leg up.
How much does cinematic storytelling play a part in your role or a music supervisor's role? Like, how much do you need to know about that? And how does one develop that?
So do you mean in the sense of, like, a music supervisor being versed in how to tell a story just as much as how to pick the music?
Yeah, because wouldn't they need that level of foresight to be able to pick the right songs for the specific moments in the movie or TV show?
You know what? I would actually say that a music supervisor, like, that would be great. It would be a nice icing on the cake to be able to also, like, know the art of telling a great story. But really, I think a music supervisor can operate in a vacuum in this case. Like, they can operate in the sense of the showrunner or the executive producer saying, hey, at this part, I really want something that sounds like this, but, mm-hmm. you know, it can't be that. I think a music supervisor could really, depending on how great their boss is, I think the music supervisor could just be great at finding alternate music options that fit that budget and be perfectly fine. The main thing for a music supervisor is making the showrunner and making the executive producer happy. So as long as they're bringing forth fire options that make sense and are in context, I don't think they would necessarily need as much as the cinematic storytelling skill. But ultimately, you know, if it's a hands-on situation where, you know, the executive producer or showrunner is, you know, inviting them to give input like that, then that's a dope situation. But it's one that I haven't seen or experienced.
Gotcha.
I'm sure it happens, though.
How does one work their way up to becoming a music supervisor on a television show or film?
That's a great question. I've seen so many pathways. I shouted out Jen Malone earlier. Her story essentially is she was a yoga instructor. And she was working in PR in Boston. And then she moved to LA, became a yoga instructor. And then she literally just took a music supervision course. The same course I took that she actually recommended for me to take. And then just kind of mixed it up with a bunch of the right people, in which honestly is such a relationship-based situation where you just gotta, you know, be in with the right people and be on their mind at the right time. And it's a situation where, okay, this prominent music supervisor now needs a coordinator to assist them. So you're the fresh person on their mind who has a great attitude. They want to bring you in. And now all of a sudden you're on IMDb as the music coordinator on these different projects, mm-hmm. which means that, you know, the next filmmaker, you know, if they can't find the right music supervisor, they're going to start looking for, okay, well, who's gotten like a lot of great music coordinator credits. Okay. You have, all right. Are you willing to come on this project as a music supervisor? So that's one route. And for Jim Malone, I think it was a situation where she really just, after she took that music supervision course, she just used her relationships and got enough credits doing reality TV shows and smaller scale stuff, mm-hmm. that's when Donald Glover, Childish Gambino comes through for Atlanta. That's when Euphoria comes and she's working with Labyrinth. Another path is being a sync agent, which is currently my path. And, you know, I started off working as a sync coordinator at Universal. Then I went to another publishing company, started pitching Timbaland's music catalog, landing placements that way. And that's a way where you can get on music supervisors' map, is as you're continuing to pitch to them, you're continuing to land options with them. You're starting to become their favorite. Like when your email comes through, they're excited for your email to come through because they know you're sending what they actually need and not mm-hmm. what you want to send them. Mm-hmm. That's a situation where you might start to buzz within the sync community and get a call to be a music supervisor. But yeah, so, you know, being a sync agent and racking up your number of placements for the pitches you do, that can land you a music supervisor gig.
Okay.
But those, I feel like those are the two main paths where you can get there. But it's such a mystical position. I feel like the majority of creatives who aren't directly working in TV and film on that side, they don't even know, like, this is like a real job where you can, like, really get it back for curating music on projects.
Yeah, it's dope. And it's, you know, one of the reasons why we wanted you on here, so to tell our community about this. Are there any other tips that you can offer to independent filmmakers on a budget, new filmmakers?
Yeah. I would say, number one, try to research sync agencies. Like, yeah, we know about production libraries. That I feel like that's the number one go-to where most up-and-coming filmmakers and people on projects, they usually go to YouTube or production libraries. But I am here to tell you that there are real artists that exist, real indie artists that exist. You know, you might only have $200 per song in your project. Guess what? If you have a sync agent licensing this or even reaching out yourself, that works as well. Some of these artists might really sign off on you using it, even though you're working with a really tight budget. So just, you know, as opposed to going straight to YouTube or going straight to faceless songs that are cool, but there is no real face behind it, try to connect with a real person who's doing dope art and incorporate that into your art. And guess what? That's also going to bring in, depending on that artist, if they're active on social media and they're excited, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be more incentivized to share your project because it's like, hey, my art is a part of that art.
Yeah.
So you just kind of widen your potential audience and viewership, because that production library ain't about to share your project. YouTube, wherever, I don't, like, if it's not a real person from YouTube, they probably ain't going to share your project. Mm-hmm. But just imagine if instead of 10 production library songs, you had 10 real people who are up and coming artists in your project. It's about to pop off because now you got at least probably 10 to 20 more people per artist that are going to be curious to know, like, oh, my friend just got a song in that project. Like, let me see it. Let me at least see that scene that they're in. Mm-hmm. Let's see how that works. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would recommend that. And, you know, just as a sync agency myself, I specialize in that, so I would love to tap in with, you know, the Black Film Space community and help, like, legally put that paperwork and clearance behind those relationships with indie artists to indie filmmakers.
Dope. Dope. I love it. I love it.
I appreciate that. This has been a dope convo. I appreciate y'all.
Of course, Rashad. Before we let you go, what are you working on now?
Ooh. All right.
You can talk about it.
Yeah, I think I can say this. I just don't want to jinx myself because I haven't fully landed it. Oh, man.
No pressure.
You don't have pressure. To say it.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? I'll just say it's a really dope series on Amazon Prime that I'm a huge fan of. It's some wild characters in it. And yeah, it's just a situation where I'm actually not pitching like R&B or hip hop tracks for it. It's really interesting because it's going to be a situation where the characters are going to be going in like gas stations, or the characters are going to be going in, you know, furniture stores, and whatever the case is, they're going in places where on the TV, or, you know, they'll be chilling in their apartment, and on the TV is going to be on the news like, hey, something just happened, or this character just did something stupid. And essentially, I just pitched a bunch of music for like just like competition shows, like what you would hear in an actual reality TV show. I pitched music for that. You know, the music you hear in the back of like TMZ, like when they come on?
Mm-hmm.
Like I pitched sound like TMZ music that, you know, in the show, like the equivalent of TMZ is talking about a character. So mm-hmm. it's like almost Inception music pitching that I did, because it's like I'm pitching for TV in the TV.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing that I'm excited about.
It's just so crazy the amount of money making opportunities there are.
Oh, that's a whole conversation. Just because, let's take network TV completely out. Let's take CBS, ABC, Fox. Let's take that completely out. You still have Peacock. You still have I forgot it. UMC.
Mm-hmm,
still have Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, Apple TV, and I don't have to tell y'all. Y'all know it's at least 20 plus, 30 plus, 50 plus original series on these networks. So it's just a situation where it's like just an endless amount of pitching music. Like it's a lot of opportunities to have your music licensed, for sure.
Dope.
Love it. How can people get in touch with you?
For sure. So to get in touch with me, I would say reach out to our IG page, which is MFE Sync. That's Madden Flow Entertainment, MFE Sync on Instagram. We have a Facebook page, Madden Flow Sync Agency. And then also, I don't know why I didn't say this first, but just go straight to the website. We have a contact form. So the website is maddenflowentertainment.com. And while you're there, there's a artist sampler that, you know, it shows the famous artists that we're able to easily license. It shows the up and coming artists that we're able to license. And it shows the slept on artists that we're able to license. Yeah, so there's that. And then there's also a quote request where you can literally say like, hey, I like that song that you have on your sampler. I want to use that in my project. I got $600. What can we do? And from there, we'll let you know, like based off of that quote request, we'll let you know like, hey, we can get that done for you. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, we can't get that done for you, but there's this other hot track that has the same chords, same swagger. What do you think about this one? We could get that for $600.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you, Rashad, and much continued success. This is really cool.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm just beyond excited to tap in with both of y'all, Black Film Space, and the entire community. I really want to bring the Madden Flow Sync community, like the same way y'all have the young and hungry, brilliant creators on that end. We're reflecting that on this end with the brilliant, hungry, creative musicians and songwriters artists who honestly, they would love to have their first placement. Like, they're really dying to have their first placement. Mm-hmm. Some of them have already been nominated for a Grammy and for some reason have not had a placement yet.
Wow.
So wouldn't it be dope to, you know, like, even on a low budget project, you're kind of introing this Grammy winning producer to get their first placement? That would be crazy.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so let's tap in. Look, like I said on a separate conversation, y'all are the jelly, we the peanut butter. We just gotta make it happen.
We're gonna make it happen. We're gonna be eating sandwiches all next 10 years or plus.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to building, and I truly appreciate y'all time and y'all bringing me on.
All right. Thank you, Rashad.
Thanks for coming through.
For sure. Anytime. Open door policy. Hit me up for anything. I'm down.
All right. Have a good one. Thank you.
All right. Y'all too. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Black Film Space podcast. This episode was co-executive produced by Gabrielle Charles and Sino Gibson and was edited by Elon P. Todd. If you're interested in being part of our community and attending events, please visit us at blackfilmspace.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Black Film Space. Subscribe to our email list and podcast. All right, see you soon.